Hare Krishna. Welcome to the study of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam as a part of our Bhakti Vaibhav course. We'll be going canto by canto, and when we study the Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll focus on the Sanskrit verses and we'll try to understand the import and the purport of those verses using the commentaries given by Srila Prabhupada, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, then of course the original commentary given by Sridhar Swami, that is Bhavartha Deepika, and of course whatever commentaries are given by Jiva Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we'll also refer to them. But our primary focus will not be on going into the esoterics of any particular acharya's understanding. Our focus will be on understanding the flow of the Bhagavatam itself. And as we move forward, we'll also look at significant points from the commentaries. And we will go verse by verse in the study of the Bhagavatam. Now, the initial verses are of foundational importance in the Bhagavatam. And that's why we may spend much more time on the, say, verse 1, verse 2, verse 3 of the Bhagavatam, then we will spend on later verses. So, let's begin with 1.1.1. Now, the Srimad Bhagavatam has 335 chapters, out of which the maximum 90 are in the 10th canto. Now, 19 chapters are in the first canto. And the first chapter is called as Questions by the Sages. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Janmadhyasyatah anvayaditartaschartheshvabhigyasvarat Tene brahmarudaya adhikavaye muhiyanti yatsuraya Tejo vari mridam yatha vinimayu yatta tithyargom risha Dhamna svena sada nirashtakuhukam satyam param dhimahi. So here it is stated that Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is an invocation. Now technically speaking, the invocation is often not a part of the book. Just like Srila Prabhupada takes Om Purnam Adaha Purnam, it is not exactly a part of the Isha Upanishad, but Prabhupada places it in the introduction of the Isha Upanishad because it's a very important part of the Upanishadic teachings. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I offer my obeisances to that Supreme Lord who is Vasudevaya, who is the all-pervading Absolute Truth. And what are his characteristics? So, that Absolute Truth whom I am invoking, his characteristics will be described in the first verse. So, dhimahi. So, dhimahi. I meditate on that Absolute Truth. So, the Bhagavatam begins with the Upanishadic tone and theme. Theme refers to subject matter. Tone refers to the method of speaking and presentation. So, what is the nature of the Upanishadic theme? Upanishadic themes focus more on the referring to the Absolute Truth, not so much in specific terms, but in generic terms that bespeak of the Absolute Truth's greatness and all-pervasiveness. So, dhimahi, I meditate on that Absolute Truth. What is the nature of that Absolute Truth? Satyam param. Is the supreme truth. There are many truths in this world, but the supreme absolute truth is one. Satyam param. The very nature of the word supreme means that there can be only one supreme. One supreme means that actually the absolute truth is the greatest, the highest. And that's why the Absolute Truth has no competition. Samurdhvaha is having no one as equal to or superior. Sama urdhva. Sama is equal, urdhva is above. So to that Absolute Truth I meditate upon. Now janmadi astyataha. This first phrase is extremely significant in the Srimad Bhagavatam because the traditional Bhagavatam commentators have used this to establish its Vedantic pedigree, or for that matter, to establish its supra-Vedantic pedigree. Vedantic pedigree means that it is actually dealing with the same subject as the Vedanta Sutra. And Supra Vedantic means that actually it gives the conclusion of the Vedanta. Pedigree, of course, refers to the caliber, to the level. So now, how does this one phrase refer to the Supra Vedantic pedigree of the Bhagavatam? Because this one verse points to the all-encompassing nature of the wisdom that is given in the Bhagavatam. This one phrase is also found as the first declarative statement in the Vedanta Sutra. The first sutra of the Vedanta Sutra is exhortative. Exhortative means this is what one should do. Athato brahma jigyasa. Now do spiritual inquiry. Do inquire about Brahman. What is the nature of that Brahman? Now try to find that out. So now the answer is that janmadi asyataha, that which is the source of the absolute, or that what is that Brahma? That which is the source of everything. Janma adi asya. So, normally when we think of source in source of things. Okay. The parent is the source of the family, or X is the source of Y and Z. We may say like this. But now, significantly, Janma adi asya taha refers to it being the source of the phases of material existence. The phases of the material existence can be either classified into 3 or 6, depending on whether we are referring to the conscious or unconscious things. We know insentient matter goes through 3 changes. There is creation, there is maintenance, and there is destruction. You know, conscious matter, actually matter is never conscious, but conscious matter is just a shorthand way of referring to matter through which consciousness is manifested. That means embodied. So that means souls were present in some bodies. So that means now our living body, it just doesn't go to these 3 changes, creation, maintenance, destruction. Yes, there is birth, then after there are further changes also. The changes are, then there is growth, then there is maintenance, then there is reproduction, then there is deterioration, and then there is destruction. So like that, there are multiple changes, but these changes happen as phases of material existence. And ultimately, time, which is the force which brings about these changes, is also an aspect of material, is also a feature of Krishna. Is actually emanating from Krishna. Everything comes from Krishna. So, rather than talking about Bhumira Ponalo Vayu Khammano Buddhirevacha, as Krishna does in the Bhagavad Gita in 7.4 and 5. These are the things which come from him. Here the Bhagavatam states that Janma adi asya taha. That's what, and it is echoing what the Vedanta Sutra says, that Janma adi, that birth and other things come from Krishna. So what this means is, from the absolute truth of course, here the word Krishna is not used right now, it will be used later, but the point is, either way, whether we talk of things which pervade in the world around us, or that which causes that, or the phases of the lifespan, of the life cycle of those things. The point is that everything comes from the absolute truth. So in this world, basically, when we talk about matter, material existence, it has basically 2 features to it. There is space and there is time. And space and time, both are actually phases, or we could say aspects of material existence. And as being aspects of material existence, they are all powerful. They are all powerful, not in the sense of being omnipotent. They are in the sense that they are present everywhere, wherever the material existence is. So not in terms of potency, but in terms of pervasion, material existence with matter is there, and along with that change is there. So space and time comprise the fabric of material existence. And both of these come ultimately from the absolute truth. So janmadi asyataha. This is one aspect of the definition of the absolute truth. Janmadi asyataha. That is the source of everything. So now after describing this, the Vedant Sutra doesn't go immediately into a description of how everything is the source of what that Brahman is. That will be elaborated in subsequent chapters. But then it says how Shastra Yonitvat, how one has to know from Shastra. And when there is apparent contradiction in Shastra, then Tattu Samanvayat. And one has to do Samanvay, one has to do reconciliation. So in this way, the Vedanta Sutra tries to establish the conclusive understanding. But either way, the important point is that we need to recognize the ultimate status of the absolute truth as the source of everything. So janmadi asyataha, and anvayad itartas chaarteshu abhijna swarad. Now there are various conceptions of the relationship of the absolute truth with material existence. So in Greek philosophy, Aristotle had the whole idea of an unmoved mover. Mover is that which causes motion. And unmoved is that which is itself not affected. So his idea is that God is a perfection. God is a conception who is eternally perfect. And eternal perfection means that there is no change in it. So in that sense, God sets the universe in motion. And after that, the universe just goes on in motion and motion on automatically. And then there is, God has nothing to do with that. So now to understand this. Now these are intricate philosophical concepts. And there are often debates within philosophers about what Aristotle actually exactly taught or not. But what we are trying to understand is the broad contours of the conceptions of the relationships that the absolute truth can have with the world. So there is, we know atheism, which says that there's no absolute truth at all in terms of no God. And there is theism, that God exists. And general understanding of theism is that God is the creator and God is the controller. Now, in between atheism and theism, there is another doctrine which is called as deism. Deism refers to the idea that God is the creator but not the controller. Just like there's a clock manufacturer. The clock could not have come by chance. The clock manufacturer surely made the clock. But now the clock manufacturer does not have any control over the clock. Similarly, God, like the original clock manufacturer, has created the world but has no control over it. This is called as deism. Deism is not the conclusive, is not the absolute truth, because if deism were true, the whole concept of God, of anyone worshipping God, praying to God, seeking salvation or liberation or purification by worship to God, would become meaningless. Because what would happen is that if God is not the controller of the world, if God cannot intervene in the world, then there would not be much point in praying to Him. It's not that we want God to intervene for our self-centered purposes, but in principle itself, the deism rules that God does not have the power to intervene in the world. And that is not correct. So here is described Anvayat Itartas Charteshva Bhigya Swarat. So Swarat, he is supremely independent. That means he can do whatever he wants. He has set the laws of nature as governing forces for the world, but he can cause those laws of nature to become suspended also. So he is the supreme being and he acts according to his supreme will. So Swarat, there is no one above him who controls him. He is the supreme controller. And Anvaya Itartas Charteshva Abhigya. Abhigya means gya is to have no one who is the knower. In the Bhagavata 13th chapter, the word Kshetragya is used. Gya is one who is knower. Kshetragya is one who is knower of the field. So Abhigya, this Supreme Lord is conscious of everything. Anvayad Itartas Charteshva, and directly and indirectly conscious of everything. That means the Absolute Truth is actually the Supreme Absolute Truth. Anvayad Itartas. So Anvayad means the Absolute Truth is conscious by direct means, itartas, by indirect means. So now what does this direct and indirect refer to? It can have multiple meanings. But primarily, the underlying focus is abhigya. The Absolute is conscious, is aware of everything. Now, suppose a fly starts moving on my arm. Then, when the fly is moving on my arm, then at that time, what I do observe is that I feel a sensation of the fly moving about. And how do I know it? At one level, through the internal nervous system of the body itself, I can sense, oh, there's something buzzing over here. And then, I get something restlessly moving. And then, oh, there must be some object which is moving on my skin. Now, indirectly, so that is directly, that is implicitly, you know. We don't need any external mechanism, we just internally sense it. Now, another way could be that I look at it and then there is some more. Now, if the fly, suppose my skin were not very sensitive, or the fly was, or for the whatever fly or the insect or whatever it is, extremely lightweight and fleet footed, then I would not feel its motion. Now, when I did not feel its motion, what would happen is that it would just move around, and maybe only if I looked down and saw it, then I would say, oh, there's something over here. So now, of course, in one sense, we are saying both of these are our own sensory perceptions. But here it's more in terms of direct and indirect. The fly is not becoming first an object of my sight. The fly moving on my skin would be the object of tactile perception, of perception through touch, through the skin. And if that's the way I perceive, then that is the direct perception. But if that way I don't perceive, then another way is through some other way of perception. Say, for example, eyes, I perceive it. So the Absolute Truth is conscious directly and indirectly. That means the Absolute Truth is conscious because of being immanent in the universe and being present in the super soul everywhere. So implicitly the capacity for consciousness is there. And indirectly also because the Lord has His representatives everywhere who act as His eyes and ears and who inform Him. Sarvatah Pani Padam Tat Sarvato Akshishiro Mukham Sarvatah Shrutimal Loke Sarvamavritya Tishtati. So, Sarvatah Shrutimal Loke, everywhere are His ears, everywhere are His hands and legs. The Bhagavad Gita 13.14 talks about this. How the Absolute Truth presents everywhere as the Super Soul. So the super. So now this also Prabhupada explains can secondarily refer to the various devatas who are present as his agencies. So either way, Anvaya Itartas Charteshva Abhigya Swarat. Now further, what is the Bhagavatam saying? Tene Brahma Ruda Ya Adikavaye. So as that Absolute Truth is being described, it is said, Tene, by that Absolute Truth, Brahma Ruda Adikavaye. So here the word Brahma doesn't refer to Brahmaji. The word Brahma is used so many times in the Vedic scriptures that we have to look at the context to understand what it means. The word Brahma can, of course, one meaning is Brahmaji. Another meaning of Brahma can refer to Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth. Another meaning of word Brahma can also be spiritual knowledge. So now the Bhagavad Gita itself has many different meanings of the word Brahma. But the important point is Brahmarudaya Adikavaye. So here, Adikavaye, the original philosopher. Kavi refers to a philosopher. The word Kavi literally, Kavita refers to poetry. So Kavi refers to poet. But in general, poets are supposed to be deep thinkers with capacity for very penetrating and moving cognition. They can think deeply and think in moving ways. So that's why the word Kavi is often used for deep thinkers or philosophers. Now, Adi Kavaye, the original philosopher, this refers to Brahmaji. Because in this world, Brahmaji was the first person who, in the universe, is the first created being after the Absolute Truth. And it was he who received spiritual knowledge from the Absolute. So, Tene Brahmaruda Yaadi Kavaye. And then, Muhiyanti Yatsurayaha. Muhiyanti means bewildered, deluded. Yatsurayaha. By him are deluded the Yatsurayaha. By him are deluded even the Devatas. So now this is talked about two ways. It may seem a little contradictory. First, it is said that this same Absolute Truth gave knowledge to Brahmaji. And then it is said that same Absolute Truth deludes the Suras. Now, is Brahmaji also not a part of the Suras? Then why is it said that Absolute Truth gives knowledge to Brahma? And then Absolute Truth, they will delude the Devatas also. So now here, we have to understand two different points over here. That the purpose of the Supreme Lord is not to delude or confuse. The purpose of the Supreme Lord is to illuminate. But the position of the Supreme Lord is such that it can confuse and delude. So, Muhiyanti Yatsurayaha. So, by whom even the Devatas are deluded. What does it mean? It doesn't mean that he has the express purpose of deluding the Devatas, but his position is such that it's so exalted, it is so magnificent, it is so incomprehensible that even the Devatas become confused by it. Muhiyanti yat surayaha. And this we will see in the later parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam when we see how with respect to Krishna, there is a Brahma Vimohan Lila. The same Brahma who is given knowledge by the Supreme Lord, he also becomes bewildered. So how does Krishna give that knowledge? That is an elaborate story that will be described, narrative that will be described in the second and third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But after Brahmaji was created, briefly here, it was he tried to do austerities. I tried to do explore. It actually first tried to explore, going up and going down, looking all around in the terrible darkness, couldn't figure out anything. So thereafter, he decided to just focus on knowing, or focus on one thing. Trying to offer himself to whoever is the Absolute Truth. And as he tried to offer himself like that, he heard the word tapa, tapa. That was the beginning of the process of illumination that began from there. Tapa, tapa. And eventually, it led to the understanding of the Absolute Truth as Krishna. So, he won austerity for a long time, following the instruction for tapa, tapa, which he had got. And eventually, he got the understanding that who is the Absolute Truth? It is Krishna. Who is the Absolute Truth eventually? So he got darshan, that described how he offered prayers. The 9th chapter, 3rd canto describes and prayers for creative energy of Brahma, and eventually he become illumined that way. So, on one side he is illumined, but same the Brahmaji can also become deluded. So it is not Krishna's intention to delude, but it is his position which causes delusion. And then, Tejo Vari Mridam Yatha Vinimayo Yatrati Sargo Amrisha. So now it's described, now this is a little intricate, that Tejo Vari Mridam Yatha Vinimayo. So here what is described is that this world is actually temporary. And in one sense, if an adult person watches a movie, at that time the adult knows that actually this is a show. This is just something which is artificial, which is imaginary, which is just being depicted for the sake of entertainment. Now, to the extent the movie is directed by an expert director, to that extent the viewers forget that this is a movie, and to that extent they get deeply absorbed in it. So same way that the more we become absorbed in something, that is a indication of the exaltedness of that particular thing, of that particular movie or that particular entertainment project, whatever it is. So similarly, this world is such that although it's temporary, and in one sense a detached person, a thoughtful person should be able to see, okay, this is just an illusion, but people are not able to see it. So this can be related with the previous statement of Yatsurayaha, that Muhyanti Yatsurayaha. So the devatas are bewildered not only about the Supreme Lord, they can get bewildered even about material existence. Now we see even the devatas sometimes, Indira, he is Suraya, he is Suraraj actually in one sense, he is the king of the Suras. But even he gets bewildered about what? He gets bewildered about the nature of the absolute truth. Not just about the nature of the absolute truth, he also becomes bewildered about the things of this world. That's how he becomes attracted to some apsara, and then he forgets everything about dharma. Not only gets attracted to apsara, he may get attracted to some rishi's wife also. And that way he becomes deluded. So, how does that happen? That is the expertise of the Supreme Lord. So that Supreme Lord, that Supreme Reality makes the unreality seem a reality. So why does he do that? Because that's what we want. To the extent we are attracted to the false displays of this world, to that extent we cannot avoid the temptations of this world. And to that extent, the temptations will delude us. So the reality, the potency of the Supreme Reality is seen not in just the Supreme, in the Supreme's glory in terms of beauty, transcendental beauty, but also in terms of that reality's potency to make the unreality seem reality. So the absolute truth reciprocates with our desires. If you want to be liberated, the absolute truth offers liberation. If you want to be entangled, the absolute truth will make the material world appear so attractive that we will become entangled in it. Tejo vari mridam yatha vinimayo trisargo amrisha. So, tejo vari mridam means that here basically how, and now, Teja is fire, Vari is water, Mridam is earth. Now these three are distinct elements, but because of an illusion sometimes sometimes it appears as if there is a wind, there is a mirage where there appears to be water on land, although there is no water on land, but there appears to be water on land. So now similarly, water and fire are opposite. But sometimes, because of illusion, fire may seem to be in water. So these are examples which are given to illustrate the point that that which is unreal is made appear real. So that's the potency of the absolute truth. And then Trisarga Amrisha. So this material world which is filled with the three changes, how it appears actual, how it appears real, now that is the masterful potency of the absolute truth. And now beyond all the changes that are happening in the absolute truth, Vamna Svena Sada Nirastikohukam. Dhamna Svena Sada. In one's own dham, that absolute truth is resisting majestically, eternally. Nirastakuhukam, free from illusion. So, that Supreme Lord is a reality who is unaffected by illusion, but that Supreme Reality can also create in this world an appearance of reality. So now, why the Absolute Truth does that, how the Absolute Truth does that, that will be discussed later on in the discussions of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But the important point is, this is the glory of the Absolute Truth. So let's summarize. What are the defining attributes that are talked about of the Absolute Truth that we are going to meditate on? Dhimahi. So, Janmadyasyata is the source of everything. And then that Absolute Truth is Anvaiditartaschartesh Vabhigya, is conscious and independent, Swarat. And then after that is the giver of illumination and is also the cause of delusion. And after that, because of that absolute truth, the unreal seems real. Trisargo Amrisha. Then after that, that absolute truth exists a reality beyond the material world. Dhamna Svena Sada Nirastikohukam, Satyam Param. And that is the supreme truth. This is the absolute truth that the Bhagavatam will talk about in its subsequent thousands of verses. And that we will discuss in our subsequent classes. Thank you. Hare Krishna.